And good morning. I am Donald Young, the newly elected chair of the San Francisco Bay Water Board, and I want to welcome you to today's board meeting of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board for the San Francisco Bay Region.
Hi.
Our meetings are hybrid and recorded, so in addition to in-person participants here in the auditorium, we may also receive public comments through our Zoom meeting platform. You can also view this meeting live and listen to recordings of previous meetings through our website on the regional board page. If you are not physically present and intend to comment today, you need to be in the Zoom meeting space rather than watching via the live telecast or webcast, excuse me. If you have not received a link for the Zoom meeting, you can visit our website and register through the link on the agenda. After you register, you will receive a Zoom link, login link with access to the meeting. If you are in person and wish to speak, you may also register online or with assistance from our team at the registration table just outside the auditorium. Your registration is not required, but helps us to ensure your voice is heard at the appropriate time. For those in the Zoom meeting, you will be muted until it's your turn to speak. Our staff will then promote you. Please remember to accept the promotion and to unmute yourself so we may hear you. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking any questions they may have, you will be placed back on mute. For those in rooms waiting to speak, you will be called by name. If you have registered or invited to speak after the registered parties, then please come down to the podium so we can best see and hear you. All speakers will be given 3 minutes for a commentary. Please state your name and your affiliate organization, if applicable, when called upon. So thank you for joining us today. We look forward to a good meeting. I would now like to ask Julie Haas, our clerk for today's board meeting, to call the roll.
Good morning. Board Member Ransom.
Here.
Board Member Batty.
Here.
Board Member Gunther.
Here.
Board Member Kissinger.
Here.
Vice Chair Hacker.
Here.
And Chair Young.
Here. That means we have a quorum. Thank you. We have a quorum physically present for today's meeting, so everyone welcome again. I would now like to open our meeting to the public forum. I want to remind everyone that the public forum is not for items that are on the agenda today. So you can speak on those items at the appropriate time, nor for items that are pending or an impending matter, meaning they are about to come up on our agenda in the next few months. Please consult our board clerk, Julie Haas, who is seated here at the front of the auditorium, if you have any questions. I will now call on each of our public speakers who have registered to speak under the public forum portion of the meeting. If you are remote and have not been called, please raise your virtual hand on the Zoom platform by clicking on the reactions icon on your screen and then on the raise the hand icon. That way we will know you're waiting to speak. Again, each speaker is allowed 3 minutes and will be timed and notified via the online timer visible on the screen. So thank you for your understanding and your participation. And with that, Julie, are there any online registrations for the public forum?
We have no online registrations today.
Okay. Are there any additional Zoom participants waiting to speak? No? No Wes? Okay. And finally, is there anyone else in the room who would like to speak? It is a silent Wednesday. It's okay. All right. Well, thank you all for your participation and passion for water quality in the Bay Area, and the public forum is now closed. With that, our next is our review of the board meeting minutes from our February board meeting. Included in our board packets and posted online are the draft minutes from the February 11th, 2026 board meeting. Are there any edits or revisions for the minutes? Anyone? No? Chair Hacker? No? Okay. Then, do I have a motion for adopting the February board meeting minutes?
Chair Young, I move that we approve the board meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second.
That is Vice Chair Hacker and Board Member Gunther. Julie, I think we need a vote on this. Yes.
Yes, sir. Board Member Ransom.
Aye.
Board Member Batty.
Aye.
Board Member Gunther.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hacker.
Aye.
And Chair Young.
Aye. Motion passes. And we will now move on to item number four, which is the chairs, board members, and executive officers' reports. Thank you. And first, we would like to welcome Sean McGuire. Sean is here, yes. Our State Water Board liaison for our region. Sean, welcome. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Young, board members. Good to see you, as always. Apologies again for being virtual today. Wish I could be there with you in person. Just a couple of things I wanted to touch on this morning. One is, I'm sure, like me, you're all wondering how the hydrology is developing for the year. And it was a incredibly warm and dry March, as I'm sure we're all aware. And we're getting a little precipitation here in April, which is nice. We're always grateful for that. And yesterday at our State Water Board meeting, we had an update from the state climate hydrologist, Michael Anderson, and Director of Department of Water Resources, Carly Nemeth, came in to provide their sense for how things are shaping up for the water year. And it will be no surprise, the updates were concerning, I would say. A couple of takeaways were that statewide, we're at about 18% snowpack. Their last week, a week ago, April 1st, they did the April 1 snow survey, which is what dictates sort of the state of the water year for the rest of the year. And there's some pretty stark pictures. If you didn't see the articles, go online. You can see pictures of a muddy field with no snow, and DWR folks out there trying to measure what is not there. The official record is we're at about 6% of our April 1st average for the northern part of the state, for the Sacramento watershed, which of course is the main area of our water supply in the state. Snowpack's a little bit better the farther you go down to the south. But nonetheless, that's where we're at today. And I think there's a lot of comparisons being drawn to 2014 and to that drought that we were in, and some pretty concerning results there. So the takeaway is that we need to remain vigilant, that in California, we're at the mercy of our Mediterranean climate and very variable hydrology. And from one year to the next, there can be extremes and swings. But one thing that we're seeing, I think, is that these extremes are even more extreme than they have been in the past. And we have to be prepared for that. We have to be prepared for years like this, where there's little to no snowpack in times where we normally rely on that to be a significant component of our water supply in the spring and summer. The saving grace here for this year is that our reservoirs are above average, so around 120% of average levels. So we're not in a place where we have low reservoir levels and also no snowpack. That's the double whammy we want to try to avoid. So there's already thoughts and discussions about how do we plan accordingly, ensuring that there's a higher level of carryover storage going into next winter, because we always have to be thinking about the next year. What if the next year is dry on top of this one? What would we do then? How are we prepared and ready to accommodate those conditions? So that's where we're at. Let's see, update. Hopefully things will change. There have also been projections of a warming trend over the Pacific and a strong El Nino scenario, which can translate to hot conditions, but it can also translate to more atmospheric rivers and more precipitation, hopefully snow coming through in the winter. So we'll see how that develops. Michael Anderson said that was a little premature to make those kinds of long-range projections. So we'll just have to wait and see how that develops. You're always welcome. Our meetings are always recorded. They're on YouTube. So you're always welcome to go check out the messages from Department of Water Resources. They had a good presentation yesterday. The other area I wanted to highlight for you is was also discussed at our board meeting yesterday, which is our annual strategic work plan update. And trust me, the last thing you want me to do is to go through the entire list of all the priorities that we have at the State Water Board and everything that we have going on. So at your leisure, I suggest that you, if you're interested, go take a look at that document when it's posted in the next week or so. We've discussed our strategic work plan at three different board meetings now, and it's largely the same kind of format we've had over the last 7 or 8 years, with some tweaks to improve the presentation and also the way we present the priorities. So now it has three different priority categories. One is programmatic priorities. Things like our safer drinking water program is a programmatic priority for the board. And then we have another group called immediate priorities, which are items that we're expecting to bring to the board for some sort of consideration, approval, decision in the next year, this calendar year. And then there's the last group is ongoing priorities, which are other important actions, also top line priorities, but likely won't be coming to the state board for consideration this calendar. So the group of priorities that we always build off of are protecting public health by ensuring safe access to safe and affordable drinking water, protecting and restoring watersheds and ecosystems, increasing statewide water resiliency, and then strengthening systems and organizational capacity, outreach, stakeholder engagement, building capacity within our organization. So there's a lot there to dig into if you're interested, so I encourage you to go do that. I will say a couple of areas to point out to you that we're working on actively this year. One is the statewide wastewater needs assessment, which has been going on for a couple of years through a contract with UCLA. They've spent the last year or so coming up with the criteria in terms of how will we assess our existing wastewater treatment facilities and sanitary sewer collection systems in areas that are unsewered, you know, septic systems throughout the state. And they've come up with a approach to do that, to assess each category. They're in the process now of taking the first cut at that, acknowledging it's going to be an iterative process. And there are, I know, some draft lists of systems that have identified wastewater needs in their opinion, and those have been circulated, I know, to regional board staff for input and feedback. We're taking that input. There's also an upcoming meeting with the Wastewater Needs Assessment Advisory Committee, which will be weighing in on some of the findings. So it's a big deal. I think one, there's a lot of work to do still to refine the list of systems to make sure it's appropriate, to make sure the way we describe the needs and the way we categorize the systems is appropriately done with consideration for all the unique challenges that we know wastewater systems face. But I think it's a really important step as we move towards coming up with that list and putting dollars to the what we know are significant infrastructure needs, both for aging infrastructure, to address issues like nutrient challenges, other compliance challenges, and sewering communities that haven't had meaningful access to sanitation and other challenges. So a lot of work to do there. But what we found with the drinking water needs assessment is it's been incredibly helpful in outlining and explaining, articulating to other decision makers, policymakers, those who hold the purse strings about the investments that we continue to need in our water and wastewater infrastructure. So more to come on that. And the last area I wanted to highlight is one that I've talked to you about multiple times before, and that is our Bay Delta plan update. That process continues. I think I may have mentioned last time we had hearings at the end of January for our latest version of the draft plan, which was released in December. Comments were due in February. We're considering all of those comments now, which were numerous. But we're really trying, very much committed to completing and adopting phase two of the Bay Delta plan by the end of the year. And so there's a lot of work that needs to happen between now and then. And I'm realizing right now it's already April. And so getting a little nervous about that because I have service to do still. But that document is many years out of date and hasn't been truly updated since in 20 years. And so it's time we need to move forward. And so I'm looking forward to that decision upcoming. It's difficult. There's a lot of moving parts. It's a very complex watershed, as you all well know, which is why I wanted to keep you updated. And I'll let you know as things evolve here over the coming months. That's all I had for today. And as always, happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Sean. Does anyone have any questions for Sean today? No, thank you, Sean. We always appreciate your reports and the details you provide for our understanding.
Thank you.
With that, I will go to our board members to see if they have any updates. I'll start with Board Member Batty.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I am going to just touch base on a couple of things and thank Sean first for his report. Great to know that our reservoirs are at 100% as we face this, you know, very dry year with very little snowpack, which is concerning. And so I did have a question for Sean that maybe we can check in later on, which is, given the conditions, will we see more conservation measures being promoted in the state, even though the reservoirs are at 100%? I can tell you at our farm, we're already moving well into summer conservation measures just to even take care of our own small little watershed. So I hope the state will keep us all on our toes about remembering to conserve water in our state, given the trends that we see. I'm going to mention, I remember sometimes that my seat is supposed to be somebody with experience in agriculture. So I'm going to just talk for a minute about agriculture right now in the Bay Area and in San Mateo County in particular, maybe. The hot weather that we've had, and I don't even want to say warm weather. I'm going to tell you, on the coast, it has been hot. It has been 75 to 85. Julie lives down there as well. She knows it's been hot. And for spring crops, peas, and a lot of the early flowers, and even strawberries, lettuces, these are not the conditions that they're used to growing. And what really does strike me is how long these extremes are staying put. So last year we had like the coldest spring on record, I think, and this year we're having the hottest. So for the agricultural community, these are difficult conditions, and you're going to see it at the farmers markets in the region. It's a little frightening about what it might portend longer term, but please support your farmers at the farmers market is what I would say to you locally. They're really working with a lot right now. But I also wanted to say something on the good news side of things. People that farm or steward the land, whether the Bay Area or elsewhere, they are deeply committed typically to stewarding the land in healthy ways. And on the coast, there's really small farms like the one I own or others up and down the coast. They are undergoing significant efforts to restore and care for these properties. Much about protecting groundwater and preserving and protecting watershed areas, some very large and some small. And we're getting a huge amount of assistance from the Resource Conservation District in San Mateo. So shout out to them, and thank you for all their good work. We are currently in the process of restoring a wetland swale area at Miramar Farms, but also I know several other small properties, Pie Ranch and larger Tomcat, are all undergoing significant efforts to try to take care of these properties. So there is some good news out there amidst all the challenges that we might be facing right now, that people continue to work hard, stay dedicated to protecting the environment, whether it's the ocean or the coastal farmland. And so thanks to the RCD and to all the work that this group does as well to steward these areas. Thanks.
Thank you, Board Member Batting. Board Member Ransom? And Vice Chair Hacker.
I wanted to make mention of a meeting that Eileen had convened on Bay Area stormwater funding, Save San Francisco Bay, Keith, and from the State Water Board, Joe Karkowski and his team came down in person. We had a very productive time with my former colleague, Dave Smith, as well, to talk about how we can attract funding to stormwater projects in the Bay Area. There was discussion about the long-term loan capacity from the state revolving funds and the propositions. Joe had mentioned that presently State Board is working on the Prop 4 technical assistance guidelines, and that they were refreshing cost estimates, which interestingly had not been done since the Prop 1 days. So we were hopeful that our discussion, and I'll, excuse me, ask you guys if you wanted to add anything. We could easily have kept talking, I think, for the rest of the day about how in the Bay Area could we attract funding to these projects, and realized that if you wanted to reach for a list of what many of those stormwater permittees would consider their wish list for a project, that we didn't really have anything that an organization could use to advocate with legislators, for instance. So among other things, we were going to try and pull together some of the projects that some of the permittees would be interested in if funding weren't so severely constrained. But what would you like to add to that? Thank you for convening that.
I just want to say thank you so much, Vice Chair Hacker, for suggesting that we have this meeting. It was a productive meeting, and we're going to be following up with the stormwater agencies. We've had follow-up discussions with Save the Bay. So I think it was just kind of the beginning of an ongoing discussion for how we can bring, you know, potentially help the stormwater agencies with their challenges financially. So thank you so much.
You want to add anything? I think that Save the Bay brings the ability to be advocates and to lobby for projects in ways that we cannot. And Dave Smith brings the knowledge of how other systems around the country are finding creative ways to fund projects, given that they have, you know, a different set of circumstances. So I'm hopeful that this will lead to a future convening, and look forward to updating. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Kissinger.
Nothing from me.
Thank you, sir. And Board Member Gunther.
A couple of things. Yesterday, the Sediment and Beneficial Reuse Working Group of BCDC met. This is a commissioner working group, kind of a commission subcommittee in a way, that I have been chairing. And we are going to be developing over the next year a Bay Plan amendment with the real goal of trying to enhance the beneficial reuse of sediment in the estuary. I am likening this to the building of the Gothic cathedrals. Those who built the foundations did not live to see the buildings, but they knew they were building something that would be enduring and important in the future. And I think that's what we're doing as well here with this project. We're really trying to reshape not only how we think about sediment, but the whole way in which we pick it up and move it around, so that we are using it to build resilience to sea level rise along the shoreline wherever we can. And this will include even recasting some of the summary statements in the Bay Plan to make it clear that sediment is a resource. It's not a waste product. And recognizing that when BCDC was founded, the real problem was trying to prevent the Bay from getting smaller. And now the Bay is getting bigger, and it's going to keep getting bigger, and we have to shape our policies around that. I was really pleased. The staff is thinking very broadly. I'm going to get very enthusiastic about this, and of course I'm counting on Javier and Eileen and others to keep me in check. they're sitting in on these meetings as well. But I think that it's going to be very, very important and a very, very regionally collaborative process. And there will be some challenges that we'll have to face, and I hope we do so with real innovative thinking. Secondly, I just wanted to note that once again there's talk from the federal government of turning Alcatraz into a prison again. I will say that, for the record, I think this is just incredibly stupid. But I hadn't thought about that. But the one question that I have, and we don't need to answer it now, but just for you guys, if this were to somehow go forward and then the president were to issue an emergency proclamation, which seems to be his proclivity, saying that that they don't need an NPDES permit, as I understand it, that doesn't affect our ability using the powers of the Port of Cologne Act to issue waste discharge requirements. Okay, good. Lastly, I just want to note that we are, I've mentioned this before, but we are living in an extraordinary revolution in our civilization as we begin to be able to imitate plants, and we are now able to use electricity directly, use sunlight directly to get the energy services we need. An amazing statistic that I just saw was that on March 29th at 7 p.m. in the evening, at the height of the peak of electricity use in California, over 42% of our electricity demand was met by batteries, which is something that even a year ago nobody would have thought possible. We're using, I think, 50% less natural gas to generate electricity than we did 2 years ago. So these are changes that are happening incredibly fast. For me, they're moving the needle in the right direction. We still have a long way to go, of course, but this is very exciting news, and since good news is a little hard to come by these days, I thought I would share that.
Thank you, Board Member Gunther. And for myself, just a quick update with ABAG. There have not been any elements that are directly related to the Water Board on the agenda and the discussions lately, but I'll continue to monitor those meetings and see if anything comes up. And then the Board Chair's monthly meeting was Monday, and it was really just discussed a lot of the regional work that's ongoing and some of the challenges for this year. And most importantly, the WQCC agenda will be finalized and sent out to us hopefully within the next couple of weeks, according to the meeting. So that is my very quick update. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Eileen for the executive officer highlights.
Great. Good morning, Chair Young and members of the board. Today, I have the great pleasure of presenting a State Board Superior Accomplishment Award. The Superior Accomplishment Award is presented to individuals who have made a difference on behalf of the state of California by positively impacting the work that we do for the public. Recipients are nominated for these awards and then vetted through a committee within the State Board. The award today is presented to Melinda Wan, Associate Government Program Analyst in our Management Services Division. Melinda started with the Regional Board in 2012 and is responsible for ensuring we deliver on the Public Records Act, the regulatory directive granting members of the public the right to request any information on any of the work we do over any period of time. We are required by law to respond to all requests within 10 days of receipt with the relevant material. At the San Francisco Bay Water Board, we receive 30 to 40 requests each week for a large variety of public records, and Melinda works with the technical staff, management, and our legal team to ensure access and our copies of our records are provided within the required time frame. For the past few years, Melinda has been overseeing a project to digitize our older pulp paper records, of which there are many decades worth. Through her commitment to this work, we have been able to reduce many of the simple requests for public records by 25%. This means that members of the public can get what they need through our electronic systems rather than having to submit a request for information. The work that Melinda has managed over the last several years has made a big difference and been a significant benefit to our region. And it's through her diligence and perseverance as part of a greater Water Board community, she has brought value to all the regional and state boards' record management processes. It is because of her attention to detail and our high standards for data quality that Melinda is being recognized today. With that, I ask you to share a thank you and a round of applause for one of our true heroes at the Water Board supporting the state of California.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Eileen and board, for this incredible honor. Receiving this award means a lot to me. I'm deeply grateful for the opportunity, the growth, the support, the recognition from the management team. I got sexy.
You're good. You're doing great.
Working here has been an amazing journey. And I'm sincerely thank every of you for making this wonderful place to be. Thank you so much.
Great. And then just to continue, as I shared in the April 2026 Executive Officer Report, we have two dedicated employees who are retiring this month, and I want to recognize them. First, we have Water Resource Control Engineer Vic Powell, who will retire after more than 34 years of dedicated service supporting the Regional Water Board's cleanup and industrial stormwater programs. Vic has overseen 25 active and closed landfills and refinery facilities, including the Martinez Renewable Fuels Facility, for which the board adopted updated waste discharge requirements at our February board meeting. Vic has also contributed to the cleanup and redevelopment of several large, high-profile sites, including the Brisbane Baylands Project, a former rail yard being transitioned to a mixed-use development with up to 4,800 housing units, the multi-billion-dollar biotech campus at the former Oyster Point landfill, and a major residential apartment community in Santa Clara. Another standout project in his career was the Mission Bay redevelopment in San Francisco. The Water Board served as the lead agency for environmental cleanup at the 303-acre site, and Vic spent nearly 4 years focused on site characterization, remedy development, and stakeholder engagement for the former rail yard and petroleum pipeline areas. One of the things he's most proud of is seeing the results of his work at many sites where he played a part in moving projects forward, particularly those that supported cleanup and revitalization in disadvantaged communities like those in Richmond and East Palo Alto. Vic has earned the trust and respect of his colleagues, the regulated community, and stakeholders alike. We're grateful for his longstanding service and contributions, and we wish him all the best in his well-earned retirement. And then next, I'd like to recognize John Wolfenton, Senior Water Resource Control Engineer in the Toxics Cleanup Division, who was retiring after 39 years of service with the Regional Water Board. John's work at the Water Board includes several key initiatives, including management of several Superfund cases and establishment of the framework for cleanup orders that is still used to this day. He also authored the sediment screening criteria and testing requirements for wetland creation and upland beneficial reuse of dredge material. John served in the Toxics and MPDS divisions, driving collaboration across our region while emphasizing operational efficiency and staff development. He has been a strong advocate for workforce development and became the coordinator for our Leadership Learning and Development Program and has served in that volunteer role for 25 years. John facilitated our leadership development focus groups with the goal of managing for organizational success. We congratulate John for his longstanding service and contributions, and we wish him all the best in his well-earned retirement. These two individuals represent over 70 years of institutional knowledge and expertise. As an organization in transition, we are stepping up to the challenges as we say goodbye to some while also celebrating the opportunities for others to step into new roles and diverse, fresh perspectives to join our team. As you know, much of our work is multi-generational, and the accomplishments we have achieved are a testament to our commitment to ensuring the legacy and our mission carries on. I look forward to sharing with you more changes in the next few months. Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen. Does anyone have any questions about the EO report for Eileen? Vice Chair Hacker.
Chair Young, I just wanted to add my appreciation to Vic and to John for their service. It's a hallmark of this water board to invest so deeply in meaningful work and to perform with integrity over such a sustained period of time. We so very much benefit from the work that both Vic and John have done. And I think that being a board member and seeing what so many of you are doing reinforces the value of this public service and the commitments made over time that each of you is making and that these two have made. So I'm hopeful that both Vic and John will find the transition into post-water board life to be one of great pleasure and good health. Thank you.
Thank you. I think it's a board member, Batty, yes.
Yeah, I really just want to add on to that and say, you know, it is rare to see this dedication to service. And I know we're all deeply appreciative. It also strikes me that the work we're doing with our records upkeep and tracking and making sure it's all electronic and this generational shift in expertise are so deeply connected. So just deep appreciation for all the work you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Gunther.
Yeah, it's just astonishing to me that each time we get an announcement of someone's retirement, they have been working here for decades. And I just think we are so blessed to have that kind of culture. And it makes me really proud to be a Region 2 board member as opposed to any of those other regions in the state. I also want to ask about the $5.5 million fine, Delta Diablo, and to just understand briefly about the Shore Acres Force Main repair project, which is where most of the money is going, and is that kind of just how this came down? This is one of the largest fines I've ever seen us levy, and understand like how. It seems like we're using the fine to leverage some repair that needed to be made, or
yeah, and I'm going to turn it over to James Parrish, who negotiated, because I'm walled off from enforcement while it was going on. But for just the benefit of the board and the public, when we do fines, there's also we can do supplemental environmental projects, and we can think about how to best use the money, whether it should go into the cleanup and abatement fund, or if we want to use it to make sure it doesn't happen again. And with that, I'm going to turn it to James Parrish, who's one of the supervisors in the MPDS division and who's him and his staff led the enforcement action.
Good morning. I'm James Parrish, just for the record. So when we do enforcement, there are a lot of things that we consider. One, you know, of those things that we consider is how we can prevent the, you know, the violation from happening again, with also things like the community in mind as well, and what does the community deserve, you know, from this. And Delta Diablo serves a disadvantaged community, and so one of the things that we can do is we can consider projects to improve the actual treatment plant itself, so that these kind of violations don't happen again, and then this also doesn't necessarily, you know, impose the cost of like a penalty on the community to, you know, make up for, you know, to recover those costs for the penalty, and so that is why the majority of the penalty money is going towards this Shore Acres improvement project, because there was a failure of the infrastructure there, and so this project is directly addressing that, and it's actually adding redundancy. In addition to a new force main, it's adding a, it's going to serve as a redundant force main to really ensure that there's not going to be a problem at the Shore Acres pump station again. I don't know if that answered your question. I came up here while you were asking, so.
No, I just want to understand, I mean, the whole, it sounds like the in arranging for this fine and the when we compare it to the alternative of just putting the money in the cleanup abatement fund, and which, as I understand, kind of heads to Sacramento, right? And this sounds really appropriate and thoughtful and directly benefits those who were impacted by the violation in the first place, which is, I think, is great. I'm really glad to hear that we are thinking in those terms and that we're able to convince the permit holders, too, that this is the right thing to do. So job well done. Thank you.
Thank you. And I will note, because you commented that $5.5 million is a lot. It is Region 2's highest enforcement action, biggest enforcement action ever. So, yeah.
Thank you, James. And Board Member Kissinger.
Well, I just want to echo the comments that have been made about John and Vic's retirements. I mean, it's been well said by my colleagues, and so I won't repeat it, but we're very appreciative. I don't know if they're in the audience, but if they're not, I hope word gets passed to them, our appreciation. Thank you.
Indeed, and those are big shoes to fill. So I hope everyone who's left on the staff is ready for that challenge. With that, before we proceed with the board items, I will administer the oath for today's hearing. All relevant evidence that any person desires to be considered by this board must be introduced at this hearing, first by the board staff, second by the discharger, third by public agencies, and fourth by any other interested parties. The board and board counsel may ask questions to clarify the testimony of a witness at any time. Cross-examination of any witnesses by others will be allowed following completion of direct testimony by all persons. Each person testifying will commence by stating his or her name, whom he or she represents, and whether he or she took the oath to tell the truth. The hearings will not be conducted according to technical rules of evidence. The board will accept any evidence or testimony that is reasonably relevant to the issues. All board files, exhibits, and agenda materials pertaining to this matter will be made part of the record of this process. Additional written material will be made part of this record at the discretion of the board. Those wishing to testify in the hearing will now rise or raise their hand. Do you promise to tell the truth? And now, Eileen, would you like to continue with the board items on our calendar for today?
Yes, thank you, Chair Young. We have three uncontested items under agenda item 5. All three items were posted online as part of your board package. Item 5A is the reissuance of the MPDS permit for the Union Sanitary District, Raymond A. Boge Alvarero Wastewater Treatment Plant, Wet Weather Outfall in Union City. Item 5B is the reissuance of the MPDS permit for the cities of South San Francisco and San Bruno and North Bayside System Unit, South San Francisco, San Bruno Water Quality Control Plant and Sanitary Sewer Systems in South San Francisco, San Mateo County. And item 5C is the reissuance of the MPDS permit for the general waste discharge requirements for residual firework pollutants from public fireworks displays. Staff are available to answer questions about any of these items.
Okay, so let's see here. Sorry, I'm a little slow here. Julie, do we have any members of the public that would like to comment on any of these items?
No, we have two registrations available to answer questions if needed, but no one has indicated they'd like to speak.
Okay. Does any of the board members have any questions? None? Go ahead, Board Member Gunther.
Just once again, every time I see a consent calendar item like this, I know that there's this enormous amount of work that has gone into making it that way, and I really appreciate it. It's a really impressive achievement. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Board Member, Vice Chair Hacker.
I was just pleased in reviewing the permits to see the investment in the infrastructure itself that we see in the Union Sand permit and the possibility of the heat recovery project in the South San Francisco and San Bruno. I just think continuing to see that it's not just a renewal of the permit, but a way forward to improve water quality protections ultimately. I thought that was intriguing, and I'm hopeful that these come to pass without a hitch. So thank you.
Thank you. Eileen, do you have a recommendation for the board?
We need to make sure there's no one in the room that wishes to speak.
Correct. Sorry about that. Do we have any other public comments in the room? None? Okay. With that, then I'll bring this back, and I'll ask Eileen if she has any recommendation for the board.
Yes. I recommend the board adopt the orders to reissue the three MPDS permits on today's uncontested calendars, items 5A, 5B, and 5C.
Understood. Do we have a motion?
Chair Young, I move that we adopt items 5A, B, and C.
So moved.
Second.
Board Member Batty. And with that, Julie, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Board Member Ransom.
Aye.
Board Member Batty.
Aye.
Board Member Gunther.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hacker.
Aye.
And Chair Young.
Aye. The motion carries. Eileen, would you please proceed with item number 6 on our calendar today?
Yes, thank you. Item 6 is a proposed amendment to the Basin Plan to add tribal tradition and culture, tribal subsistence fishing, and subsistence fishing beneficial use definitions to the Basin Plan. Tong Ying, Water Resource Control Engineer in the Planning Division, will provide a presentation as part of the public hearing, and then the public will have an opportunity to provide testimony. With that, Tong.
Shall we bring up the slide? Yeah, thank you. Good morning, Chair Yang and members of the board. My name is Tong Yin. I'm presenting you a proposed amendment to the Water Quality Control Plan for the San Francisco Bay Basin, which I will refer to henceforward as the Basin Plan Amendment for your consideration. The amendment would add definitions for three beneficial uses: tribal tradition and culture, tribal subsistence fishing, and subsistence fishing. And here is the primary rationale driving this Basin Plan Amendment project. In 2017, the State Water Board adopted the statewide mercury provisions, which established three new beneficial uses: tribal tradition and culture, which we refer to as CAL; tribal subsistence fishing, which referred to as TSUP; and subsistence. Let's just start from the beginning of slide number 2 on the background. So here's the primary rationale of driving this Basin Plan Amendment project. In 2017, the State Water Board adopted the statewide mercury provisions, which established three new beneficial uses: tribal tradition and culture, which referred to as CAL; tribal subsistence fishing, which referred to as TSUP; and subsistence fishing, which referred to as SUP. The State Water Board and the Regional Water Boards may designate these uses to their water bodies to recognize the practices of California Native American tribes and other communities that may consume fish at rates higher than recreational averages. This proposed amendment aligns with the Basin Plan Triennial Review that you approved in 2025, which identified designating the CAL, TSUP, and the SUP beneficial uses as the highest priority Basin Plan project. The first step of this high priority project is to add these beneficial use definitions to the Basin Plan. Chapter 2 of the Basin Plan defines and designates the beneficial uses for surface and groundwater in the San Francisco Bay region. This proposed amendment would add the definitions for the three beneficial uses to Chapter 2. The first two, CAL and T-SUB, are tribal uses, and the third one, SUB, addresses communities that rely on higher fish consumption for sustenance. As we stated in the previous slide, these definitions are already established in the statewide mercury provisions. This step defines the meaning of these uses. A future action will assign them to specific water bodies. The definitions for these beneficial uses will be presented on the following three slides, which we propose to incorporate into Chapter 2 of the Basin Plan. The first beneficial use, tribal tradition and culture, CAL, is defined as uses of water that support the cultural, spiritual, ceremonial, or traditional rites or life ways of California Native American tribes, including but not limited to navigation, ceremonies, or fishing, gathering, or consumption of natural aquatic resources, including fish, shellfish, vegetation, and the materials. Here, life ways is defined as any customs, practices, or art of a California Native American tribe. Here, California Native American tribes is defined as a federally recognized California tribal government listed on the most recent notice of the Federal Register, or a non-federally recognized California tribal government on the California Tribal Consultation List maintained by the California Native American Heritage Commission. The second beneficial use, tribal subsistence fishing, TSUP, is defined as uses of water involving the non-commercial catching or gathering of natural aquatic resources, including fish and shellfish, for consumption by individuals, households, or communities of California Native American tribes to meet needs for sustenance. And the third beneficial use, subsistence fishing, SUB, is defined as uses of water involving the non-commercial catching or gathering of natural aquatic resources, including fish and shellfish, for consumption by individuals, households, or communities to meet needs for sustenance. This Basin Plan Amendment serves as a foundational step that must be completed before these beneficial uses can be designated for specific water bodies in a future separate Basin Plan Amendment. Our work to incorporate these beneficial uses into our Basin Plan is a meaningful step toward improving water quality and protecting the health of indigenous communities, the environment, and the broader public. The addition of these definitions will help ensure that cultural and subsistence practices are recognized and safeguarded. By designating water bodies for these uses in a future separate Basin Plan Amendment process, we can better restore and protect these waters while also strengthening our relationships with tribes and deepening our understanding of their connections to these places. Before this Basin Plan Amendment action, in April 2022, the Water Board hosted Tribal Summit to introduce the statewide approach to protect tribal beneficial uses. Although not statutorily required for this Basin Plan Amendment, Water Board staff conducted outreach to tribal communities and environmental justice groups. Since this Basin Plan Amendment is the first step before the designation of these beneficial uses, tribes and environmental justice communities showed interest in learning more about the scope of the project. We met with Confederated Villages of the Shawnee Nation. We also met with San Francisco Baykeeper, communicated with California Clean Water Action and the California Indian Environmental Alliance, and explained our phased approach. These outreach efforts help ensure that tribes and environmental justice communities are engaged early in the process and prepared for the next phase of the project, during which we will conduct additional and targeted outreach. We only received one comment letter from Bay Area Clean Water Agency, or BAQA. BAQA supports the protection of tribal and the subsistence use and the proposed basin plan amendment. In its letter, BAQA noted that municipal wastewater loads for mercury and the PCBs remain well below the total maximum daily load allocations. It also highlighted its ongoing efforts related to bioaccumulative pollutant monitoring and risk reductions. We appreciate BAQA's support for the proposed basin plan amendment and recognize its members' significant and ongoing contributions to protecting San Francisco Bay water quality, particularly its leadership in pollution prevention, pretreatment program, risk reduction efforts, and its support and funding of the subsistence fishing questionnaire and other critical data collection and monitoring initiatives. And that concludes my presentation, and we can now take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Yin. Does anyone have any questions for Ms. Yin? Vice Chair Hacker?
Thank you to the team and to you for working on this. Thinking ahead to the integrated report process, how are we over time with other partners, whether SFEI or EPA and so forth, how are we building our database on actual fish consumption data for the 9-county Bay Area?
Excellent question. We are, well, first of all, we developed a survey form working with some community-based organizations. We were working with State Board through a SWAMP program to implement that more around the Bay. Unfortunately, some of that funding got pulled, so we turned to BAQA, who gave us a little bit of money, and we're able to do a pilot project. We currently are continue to do that with our own staff and have taken surveys all through in January and February, mostly in the Central Bay. We worked with SFEI also to put in a grant proposal for the SF Bay Fund in order to continue to do the survey work in order to try and capture all the 9 Bay Area counties. You have to remember when we did the recreational survey back in 2000, it cost $1 million to do the whole Bay. So we're trying to do it stepwise with the bits of money that we're able to get.
Thank you, and thank you for working on this.
Board Member Kissinger? No? Okay. Board Member Batty?
Just a quick one. So maybe tribal, it sounds like tribal organizations were part of developing this, but were there any comment letters or from tribal organizations? I didn't see any, but
during the public review period, we didn't receive any comment letter. But one tribe always shows interest to keep them in the update. So it's there. That's only recently received during the public comment period.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead, Board Member Gunther.
Yeah, I'm just to make sure I understand. This is long overdue, I think, to create these beneficial uses. But our ability to prevent their impairment is something that, if we take the subsistence fishing one, for example, No, depending, I guess, do we then go, we go forward and we define impairment? Is that the next step? I'm trying to understand it doesn't surprise me that Bakwa said something about PCBs and mercury, which will be, as I understand it, impairing subsistence fishing for another century at least.
Well, it's impaired now, so and it is going to take time.
Okay.
We don't have the data to say what the effect will be on subsistence fishing yet, so it's a little premature to say. But we do know, because we took the 99th percentile of that survey, so we did take a really high level. We don't know whether subsistence consumption fishing rates were captured in that survey or not, which is one reason why we are redoing the survey with subsistence fishing specifically in mind. And then we'll be able to assess where we're at. But it will take, even with the current consumption rate, it's going to take a long time to address PCBs and mercury. And at the same time, we have PFAS and other things coming in. So it's going to be a while. You're right.
Right. Okay. So that's kind of what I was trying to understand, because we have the information we have, we've already had to recommend limits on subsistence fishing, consumption of fish. So that, as I think about it, is sort of it defines impairment. Right, so it's I would think unimpaired subsistence fishing is you can eat fish from the bay for sustenance, and it seems to me like you can only do that to a limited extent now and for a long time in the future, but the there's not that much we can do about it, I guess is kind of my sense of the challenge given how these substances are already distributed in the estuary.
Well, we're doing quite a bit. So I wouldn't say that there's not much we can do about it. I mean, sure, it's going to take a long time, but there's a lot that we can do, and we are doing through the stormwater permit, through the POTWs and what they're doing.
I recognize that. Not to say we're not doing anything, but that the concentrations of some of these chemicals in fish are very persistent and a little recalcitrant to our actions, and have been, you know, relatively unchanged. The big thing was banning PCBs, and there's a great article in Marine Pollution Bulletin from many years ago I'm just trying to get a sense that we're establishing a beneficial use that we know will be impaired for a long time, even though we're not right now defining impairment. But we have there's kind of a common sense definition that at least to me, says that this is going to be a challenging problem for a long time.
Yes,
and everybody understands that.
I don't know that everybody understands that.
Okay.
But yes, it will be a challenging problem. One of the things that we're going to discuss with tribes and other and subsistence fishing communities is the science and the length of time it'll take, and that's part of the engagement process that is ongoing.
Okay,
but I guess the question, just to pick up on Andy's question, is what practical difference does making this change accomplish? What, by recognizing this, what does it accomplish?
In terms of additional actions, for PCBs and mercury, not much.
Yeah.
Can I jump in?
Please.
If we were to fast forward a few years, I could imagine if we were to pick a part of the Central Bay where you have good data, and we know something about the kind of subsistence fishing, and possibly in other parts of the Bay, tribal subsistence fishing, and correct me if you see it differently, that we would have data about whether the level of impairment based on the fish themselves or a surrogate in water quality, and we would be able to have public messaging around safe levels of fish consumption for those with the body burden, like for children should eat no more than X, or for populations in the Bay Area that might favor other organs of the fish where chemicals might concentrate. We might have some kind of public messaging or advisory around public peers, as SFEI noted a few meetings ago. So there, I think it just leads us to a point of being able to provide a guideline on safe levels of consumption where we didn't have data before. What would you add?
I would agree with that. And I wouldn't focus, I mean, there's the San Francisco Bay, which is going to be challenging. But there's other water bodies in the San Francisco Bay region as well. And there are perhaps more things we can do in order to reduce the pollutant load. But as Vice Chair Hacker mentioned, you know, yes, we can have, we can influence the messaging, and we have influenced the messaging. The more data we have, the more we can contribute to that.
Yeah, well, I was just like out of Point Pinole, actually, on the pier last weekend, and there's already lots of messaging that we have worked on for a long time to get it clear. And in fact, I looked at the signage and recognized this was the third or fourth generation of messaging that was there and allowed people who don't even speak English to understand. I thought it was very sophisticated. And that messaging is already there, and it's good. I mean, is there? I mean, I don't want to be like taking us around and around, because it's, I think it's very important that the Basin Plan recognize that these are beneficial uses. I'm really glad that we're doing this. I just don't want to be setting up expectations that we already understand based on the science are going to be just very, very, very long-term goals.
Yes, I understand. Maybe I understand the challenge very well, Andy. Thank you.
I want to respond to Board Member Kissinger. So the beneficial uses in our basin plan, whether or not they are explicitly stated, are protected. So these uses, you know, we didn't have to necessarily explicitly state them to protect them. However, so this is the first step to designation, which will be, we're going to assign these beneficial uses to certain water bodies. And then it will be part of the standard, especially combined with water quality objectives. So just in a, you know, formal process-wise, this is the first step. But also, we view this as making a latent beneficial use that wasn't stated explicitly an explicit regulatory driver, right? Making it transparent, this will more easily be acknowledged in CEQA analyses and permits and TMDL. And it basically is another strengthening, you know, element when we do our work and to explicitly recognize it.
And my question wasn't intended to be a criticism so mm-hmm. much as a, what are we accomplishing by highlighting this? I mean, it's plainly a problem, a persistent problem. Maybe an unsolvable problem as we add new problems like PFAS to the list of things that are going to interfere with sustainable, you know, fishing in the bay. Anyway,
that's a fair question, and sometimes we do get this question from the tribes as well. And it's, so what is this going to do? So it's a fair question, but we view this as the scaffolding to build everything on top going forward.
Thank you. Anyone else? No. Julie, do we have any members of the public that would like to comment on this proposed amendment?
We do. We have three registrations, two of whom are online right now, Michelle Rivera and Sherry Norris from California Indian Environmental Alliance.
Okay. Michelle is first. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. Let's get Michelle on. Shale, can you hear us?
Michelle, if you're online, please accept the invitation and unmute yourself.
Hello?
Perfect.
Yeah, we can hear you, Michelle.
Oh, okay.
Good morning.
Thank you. I am so sorry. That was such a struggle. I didn't know whether or not to join as a panelist. Apologies.
No problem. Go ahead. The floor is yours for 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. First, we just want to express gratitude to the board for adopting all three definitions into the basin plan, and thank you for supporting tribal beneficial uses and the subsistence uses of Bay Area communities. We recognize now the work begins, and we are dedicated to supporting the Water Board and Bay Area tribes as we move through the process. It is our understanding that there is a new staff person coordinating with tribes and NGOs to receive TBUs and coal designations and work through the integration of these regional board efforts and programs. And we recommend that there be a tribal advisory committee to be developed and to hold a series of tribal summits to support future steps of the phased approach. And, you know, we or my or the organization, California Indian Environmental Alliance, will, you know, be open to supporting that work as well. And then I have one last comment that I would like to add on to there. And SIA has done some surveys in collaboration with specific California tribes, and we have some surveys from tribal community events, and we can work with SFI to develop and help provide support and continued surveys in collaboration with Bay Area tribes. This was paid for in part by Cali PA and BACWA. And Sherry would also like to speak if she can.
She's the next person. Okay, yes.
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Sherry Norris is.
Yes.
Sorry. Yeah,
no problem, Michelle. Thank you so much for your time.
No, sorry. No, she said that. I'm sorry. I thought she said if she can speak, but she cannot at the moment. Her audio is not working.
Okay, understood.
I think I can. I don't.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Okay, yeah, it was, sorry, guys. This is the first time we've used your online process.
Yeah, reset the timer. Thank you. 3 minutes. Sherry, go ahead. Thank you.
Oh, it'll be brief. Michelle got most of our comments. I just wanted to thank you guys again. I really appreciate the conversation about why to do this. And it is really about transparency and is exactly what some of the board members have said here about being able to lay it out on the table and really look at it when you guys are deliberating what water quality objectives should be, et cetera. Having all that data in front of us is so important. And thank you so much for acknowledging that. And I appreciate you guys. We've worked with SFEI a lot on fish consumption surveys, and in particular, identifying locations to sample to get the numerical information we need to know what toxins are in fish. And we look forward to continuing that and working with the tribes in the region. Thank you so much. Take care, you guys.
Thank you very much for your comments. Do we have anyone else online now?
We have one more, Lucy Bayan, who registered from Confederated Villages of Lishan Nation. She hasn't yet online.
Let's wait.
Just making Wes a call.
You shaking your head, Wes? No, she's not. She is not online at the moment.
And not here in person. So.
Okay. With that, I think we can see, are there any other public comments in the room? I see none. Okay, and with that, I think I will bring it back. And Eileen, do you have a recommendation for the board for us?
Yes, I recommend the board adopt the resolution under item 6 to adopt the proposed amendment to the Water Quality Control Plan for the San Francisco Bay Basin to add tribal tradition and cultural, tribal subsistence fishing, and subsistence fishing beneficial use definitions.
Thank you, Eileen. Do we have a motion from the board?
Chair Young, I move that we adopt these designations per item 6.
Got it. So moved by Chair Hacker, or Vice Chair Hacker. Have a second.
I'll second.
And Board Member Kissinger is our second. And with that, can we have a roll call vote, please, Julie?
Board Member Ransom.
Aye.
Board Member Batty.
Aye.
Board Member Gunther.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hacker.
Aye.
And Chair Young.
Aye. The motion carries. Item 6 has been approved by the board. Thank you. And now, Eileen, would you like to proceed with the informational items on the agenda for today?
Yes, thank you. So item 7 on the agenda describes the process used, we will hear today, for the integrated report for the San Francisco Bay region. The integrated report is a non-regulatory, data-driven report that summarizes the status of surface water quality in the state and identifies those water bodies that are considered impaired waters. Dr. Christina Yoshida, an environmental scientist in the planning division and the Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Program Manager, will be providing the presentation on the 2030 integrated report. With that, I turn it over to you, Dr. Christina Yoshida.
Thank you. Good morning, board members and Chair Young. Again, my name is Christina Yoshida. I'm an environmental scientist here, and I manage the Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Program, or SWAMP. And I'm newly taking on the lead role of managing the integrated report for our region. So today I'm going to provide you with an informational item on the update of the 2030 integrated report. So here's a brief overview of this presentation. I'll start with some background information, then discuss the process, and finish up with a summary of the 2024 integrated report results and a quick preview of the 2030 cycle. Throughout the presentation, I'll include some photos of our SWAMP team that collected a lot of the data that is going to be assessed in the integrated report. This photo shows one of our field crews collecting nutrient data in Lake Merritt after the 2022 fish kill. All right. So first, I'll give you a broad overview of the integrated report. In our region, this program is housed in the planning division under Javier Fernandez and section leader Sarah Jacobs. The purpose of the integrated report is to assess and report on the quality of surface waters throughout the state in fulfillment of the Clean Water Act requirements, which I'll discuss further in the next slide. The results of the integrated report do not directly establish new regulatory requirements, but they can help us prioritize impaired water bodies for actions such as further monitoring, restoration actions, or total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs, which are water quality improvement plans. They may also inform permit development and requirements, such as evaluating effluent limitations or requiring monitoring. So the integrated report fulfills the Federal Clean Water Act requirement that all states must report on the condition of the surface water every 2 years. It consists of two parts, the 303D list of impaired water bodies and the 305B report of the overall condition of water bodies. The 303D list identifies waters that do not meet water quality standards for individual pollutants and lists the specific beneficial uses that are not being supported. For example, Crown Beach in Alameda may be listed for bacteria for the beneficial use of recreation or swimming. The standardized process to complete the 303D list are described in the state listing policy. It describes, amongst many things, listing and delisting factors, assessment methodology, and reporting. The 303D list must be approved by the U.S. EPA. The 305B report informs the overall condition of surface water quality. It is submitted to the U.S. EPA, and they compile reports from every state into the National Water Quality Inventory Report, which is submitted to Congress. Neither the State Board nor the U.S. EPA take a formal approval action of the 305B report. So together, the 303D list and the 305B report form the key components of the integrated report. So the state is required to conduct the integrated report every 2 years. To achieve this timeline, each region rotates through the integrated report cycle every 6 years. The San Francisco Bay Regional Water Quality Control Board, or Region 2, shown on the map and table here, last completed the cycle in 2024, and we are just starting the new cycle in 2030. For 2030. Note that the year indicates when the cycle ends. This slide is a general summary of the integrated report schedule. The first thing to notice is that the process takes a really long time, with work taking place over 4 to 5 years. This work is done in collaboration with regional and state water board staff, where we each take the lead on different steps of the process. So for example, the state board takes the lead in the data solicitation, public process that includes a state board hearing, and lastly, submission to the US EPA. Therefore, the regional team is not working intensively during the entire period. The regional board staff had significant involvement with the data review, mapping, and analysis portion of the process, which takes about 22 months. We will also have a supporting role in the public process, particularly in responding to comments. So next, I'll briefly go into each of these five steps. So the first step in the process is the data solicitation. The public notice is anticipated to go out this month for data to be submitted over a four-month period. This cycle, we are accepting new data collected between 2020 and 2026. We assess surface water, sediment, and tissue data from various entities, such as the regional and state monitoring programs, the Bay Area Stormwater Agencies, Beach Watch, and other agencies and community groups. Data is submitted into the California Environmental Data Exchange Network, or CEDIN, and a publicly accessible surface water data portal managed by the Water Board. Data that is incompatible with CEDIN, such as continuous temperature data, can be submitted directly to the Integrated Report Data Portal. All right, so the second step of the integrated report process is data review and mapping. Here we work with the State Board to review the data that has been submitted and determine if it's appropriate for assessment. Data that don't pass quality assurance checks or are not accompanied by a QAP, which is a quality assurance project plan, are not used in the integrated report. The other big task before analyzing data is mapping. All available data have to be linked to an assigned water body. So if a water body doesn't have data from a previous cycle, we must draw the water bodies and associate data to them. This is a very time-intensive process. However, it's important that the water bodies are scrutinized because mapping choices, such as defining individual watershed reaches, can impact final listing decisions. The map on the right shows the Hayward area and the water bodies that are mapped with existing data. The red lines are water bodies that are listed as impaired, and the green lines show water bodies that are not listed because they don't meet the criteria for listing. And note that not all water bodies are included in this map because they might not have data yet that we've analyzed. So the next step is data analysis. All the data we analyze are turned into lines of evidence, or for short we call them LOEs. An LOE is a unique combination of seven components. The first five components are shown in blue and include water body, beneficial use, sampling station, pollutant, and matrix. They are then combined and compared to a numeric threshold for a specific beneficial use, shown in green. Numeric thresholds are derived from US EPA recommended criteria, state water quality objectives, or other scientifically supported criteria identified in peer-reviewed literature. And then finally, the LOE includes a summary of the number of samples and the number of exceedances of the applicable numeric threshold. So for an example, we have Alameda Creek for the beneficial use of cold water fish habitat, at Niles Canyon at Station 200 for ammonia in water and using the 25 micrograms per liter threshold. And for this example, we have 4 out of 20 exceedances. So the newly created LOEs are then combined from data from previous cycles. So this means that we consider all relevant data that we have available. Next, the LOEs are combined to make a decision for a particular water body and pollutant combination. We use the guidance from the State Water Board Integrated Listing Policy to determine if we have enough samples and exceedances to list or to not list. Eventually, we combine multiple decisions to develop the water body fact sheets that summarize all the listing decisions for a particular water body. And so I'll give you a quick example. We're going to use that LOE that we had from the previous slide for Alameda Creek and add in a second one from a different site. So the total number of exceedances is 6 out of 30 samples. This meets the listing policy criteria to list Alameda Creek as impaired for ammonia for cold water fish habitat beneficial use. Next, we combine the other decisions for Alameda Creek, such as an impairment for dissolved oxygen and total nitrogen, to create the water body fact sheet for Alameda Creek. All right, so the last two steps of the process are the public review and US EPA approval. Following completion of the data analysis, the State Water Board releases a draft integrated report and staff report for a 30-day public review comment period. Our region notifies interested parties through established stakeholder mailing lists, which include permittees, regulated entities, environmental organizations, and other interested stakeholders. Staff review and respond to public comments and revise the report as necessary or as appropriate. The final report of the final draft of the integrated report is then submitted to the State Water Board for consideration and adoption. And finally, it's submitted to the US EPA for review and approval. All right, so now that I've explained the integrated report process, I'll give you a summary of the last time our region was in cycle, on cycle in 2024. We evaluated data from 397 water bodies. The assessment process produced over 6,000 water body pollutant decisions. The 2024 cycle resulted in a 40% increase in the number of impaired water bodies with 123 new listings. The plot on the right shows the new listings sorted by pollutant type, which includes bacteria, pesticides, dissolved oxygen, toxicity, nutrients, and benthic community effects, BCE, which are assessments that evaluate stream condition using macroinvertebrate biological indicators. For the upcoming 2030 cycle, we have all new regional board staff, except for me, as several of our seasoned staff are retiring or have moved positions. We, however, anticipate a lower level of effort needed to complete this cycle since we'll be analyzing less data from 2024. This is due in part to the COVID pandemic when less data was collected. So again, I'm leading the 2030 Integrated Report Cycle, and interested parties can reach out to me at the provided phone number and email address. And then, yeah, in conclusion, we anticipate kicking this off, this multi-year 2030 Integrated Report Cycle this month with a public notice of data solicitation. We'll then do the data quality checks and mapping and assessment steps over the next few years before the State Water Board puts the draft integrated report for public review and then out to the EPA in 2030. So that's the end of my talk, and now we can take questions.
Thank you, Christina. Do we have any questions from the board? Board Member Gunther?
So without getting into too much detail, we can do this offline, but the existence of a quality assurance project plan is different than making sure the quality assurance project plan is being followed.
Right.
And so if you are accessing data regarding contaminants like mercury that are extremely difficult to collect without contaminating your sample, are you also looking at when someone submits data to you, are they also submitting analysis of certified reference materials and analysis of blanks to demonstrate that they know what they're doing?
That's a good point. I don't believe that we look if they included blanks in each batch of samples. I think there's a level of trusting the process. If they have a QAP, that they're following it. We can't look into each lab if it's certified, but honestly, most of the data that's like mercury or pesticides, they're from our known collaborators, like the Regional Monitoring Program or State Water Board or Regional Water Board. If we do get data, I know in the past that we are like, who is this? Who's collecting this? I know we've done a little digging to figure out the quality of their data and dig into it a little bit more, especially if we think it's going to lead to a decision.
Okay, right. I mean, I understand the challenge that we face of doing this, but let's say you get a set of samples and there's some really high mercury numbers. Mm. Do you have a process of assessing that batch of analyses and looking back to make sure that what you're seeing is actual environmental contamination and not laboratory contamination?
Right. Let me think about that. I know we do a percentage of checks of the data lines that we get. It was like 10% or so, but I mean, this is hundreds of thousands of data.
But if we
do get weird outliers, I think we definitely, they have this elaborate R code that they use at state, and I hope and I think, and we can double check that they would see these outliers and send it to us and check into it.
Okay, because this, I don't mean to be critical here, because you are attempting to do an enormous amount of work with very limited resources.
Yeah.
And it is, I find it commendable that we are trying to cast a broad net to bring this information into our assessments of our 303D assessments. But there is this challenge of how to do this work and how to do this work correctly.
Yeah.
Even for something like ammonia, I just want to make sure that we have some system in place to try and prevent us from drawing, you know, false positive conclusions.
Right. Yeah, I remember in the last round, there were a few pollutants and decisions that we were going to be having to list, and we looked into them, and we're like, hey, these, you know, it was like chlorine, for example, and we've discovered that there's no way that any of the field test kits could even meet the reporting limit for our beneficiaries. So we caught those.
Okay.
And actually, speaking of ammonia, we didn't trust some of the data, so we actually went back and resampled those sites the past few years to check if
it's that kind of common sense expert review that would really help making sure that the QAPP objectives are being met. So great, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Board Member Gupta. Vice Chair Hacker.
Thanks. I thought you did a lovely presentation explaining the process, and I was thinking back to the last listing cycle. In the slide where you showed which boards are going through this concurrently, you have the major urban boards with us at the same time, which I think gives rise sometimes to various policy calls or data calls with state board that may be common across the major urban boards of us, board 4, 5, and 8. And so I'd like us to just be taking stock as you go through the process of perhaps in a couple of years an informational item for the board, just as to how the process is playing out. I felt quite shocked last time around at how many new listings there were as a result of something I felt was beyond this board's orbit. You know, the state board said, no, hundreds of new listings. And it was like, what?
Was that for the benthic community effects?
Among other things. So I just would like to avoid that kind of shock to the system that we as a board with you understand what are the implications of this current, not the data gathering per se, but when you get to the data analysis phase, and how does that relate to whatever policy choices are being made as state board takes in the five major boards there around its listing policy. I don't know, for example, Eileen and Xavier, when it's appropriate to make proposed changes to the statewide listing policy, but it needs to be something that is pragmatic and scientifically based and all the rest of, you know, the good ingredients. So I'm interested in hearing about this when we're further down the road and in avoiding kind of some of the arguments we had to engage in over the appropriateness of proposed listing decisions, which would be yours to.
Board Member Kissinger.
Yeah, thanks. I have a question and a question, quasi-comment. So just picking up the earlier question, I didn't understand the rotating cycle amongst the boards. Is there one integrated report that ultimately gets produced based on that six-year span, or is it every 2 years an integrated report gets produced? And how does that work? I didn't quite understand that.
I think I'm pretty confident they only report on the 2 years, whatever regions are on cycle. I can't remember what year it was, but basically as a state we were behind in submitting this on time for EPA, so the way to deal with it was to split it up in cycles because there's no way that state board could support all regions at once.
That goes to my second question, which is it's incredibly daunting the amount of evidence you gather for even one impacted stream, let alone all of them in a region. It's sort of unbelievable. And I guess the question that I have after the comment of how unbelievable the amount of data that has to be collected is, who's collecting all this data? We're not collecting it. I take it permittees are, or are we actually collecting this data?
So I run the swamp program, and we actually collect quite a bit of the data, and same with state water board. And then a lot of it comes from our regional monitoring programs, so the county programs.
And is there any federal funding that comes through to us to do this, since it's a federal mandate?
I don't know that answer.
Well, there used to be, not anymore.
It's unbelievable.
I have a little fact just to throw it out there. It's 2.3 million rows of data we did in our last round and over 20,000 LOEs. So luckily, the State Water Board has developed some good code to be able to sort through it. So when we get to it, it's just a few hundred thousand rows of data.
I will add, though, that EPA is contributing to the Bay Regional Monitoring Program and the Wetlands Regional Monitoring Program to help collect data that does feed into the integrated report.
Yeah, I mean, and we're a pretty well-resourced state. I can't imagine what other states are doing to meet this mandate. Amazing.
If at all.
If they are.
Thank you, Board Member Kissinger. Any other comments? Julie, do we have any members of the public that would like to comment on this item?
No registrations.
And how about anyone in the public in the room here? Any comments? I see none. Now, Eileen, on to the final item on our agenda.
Great. Thank you, Chair Young. I'm pleased to present the updated San Francisco Bay Regional Water Quality Control Board strategic plan today. This update reflects a strong, collaborative effort by our leadership team, who work closely together to shape, refine, and align on the plan's priorities and direction. Through ongoing coordination and shared ownership, the team collectively updated the strategic plan and is jointly responsible for advancing the goals and implementing the priorities. I'd like to recognize the entire leadership team for their partnership in this effort and extend special thanks to Maggie Monahan, Senior Water Resource Control Engineer, and Demir Worthington, Engineer and Geologist, for their key roles in planning, organizing, and updating the strategic plan. They will be presenting with me today. Next slide, please. This slide provides a brief overview of today's presentation. I'll start with an overview of the biennial update, what it covers, and how the update process was carried out. Next, I'll provide some background on the purpose of the strategic plan and how it guides our work. Then I'm going to turn it over to Demir and Maggie to walk through an overview of the plan itself and to highlight some of the key updates made as part of this biennial refresh, including changes to priorities, targets, and content. We will close with next steps, including how we will continue to implement the plan and track our progress moving forward. Next slide, please. This biennial update covers fiscal years 2027 and 2028 and is intended to ensure that the strategic plan remains current, relevant, and aligned with emerging challenges. The update process kicked off in late 2025 and was carried out collaboratively across the leadership team. Each program contributed updates reflecting recent accomplishments and emerging priorities, with iterative review and coordination to ensure consistency and alignment across our organization. As part of this effort, we reviewed and refreshed the entire document. Updates include revised program descriptions, the addition of spotlights highlighting key accomplishments, and updated priorities, targets, and milestones for the next two fiscal years. We also incorporated several new photos to showcase the impact of our work, including updated feature images on the front and back cover, courtesy of Demir. Before turning it over to Demir and Maggie to highlight the updates, I'll start with a brief background of the strategic plan. Next slide, please. In the strategic plan, we describe what we do to create transparency about our work to the public we serve. We define our overarching organizational priorities and the water quality programs we implement to achieve our mission. We continue to utilize the strategic plan and our engagements with various community organizations to advance our racial equity and environmental justice actions, as well as to attract, retain, and engage a talented, diverse, and inclusive workforce in support of our mission. Next slide, please. First and foremost, we are dedicated to serving the public as we work to achieve our mission. This is our top priority, to work to protect water quality to support the many beneficial uses to the public. The photo on this slide is of Water Board staff providing training on creek surveying in collaboration with Urban Tilth, a Richmond-based community group. Collaboration is key to successful water quality protection because of the range of water quality challenges we work on and the extensive and diverse nature of our stakeholder community. The figure on the right lists the various groups that we collaborate with, including the regulated community, local governments, state and federal agencies, tribes, academic and research institutions, community and environmental organizations, and public stakeholders. We view collaboration as a fundamental part of how we achieve our mission, bringing together different perspectives, expertise, and resources, which results in better outcomes. And now I'm going to pass it over to Demir to highlight more of the content of the strategic plan and updates.
Great. Thanks so much, Eileen. Now I'm going to start with an overview of the strategic plan. It covers who we are, providing an overview of the Water Board's, our mission, and our organizational priorities. It covers what we do, with brief descriptions of each of our water quality programs, our priorities, which includes both organizational priorities and associated actions, as well as program priorities and associated targets and milestones. On the right, you can see we have an image of our Bay Area region showing surface streams, creeks, and coastlines throughout the region. Starting with our organizational priorities, they remain unchanged. These include implementing climate actions, advancing racial equity, and addressing environmental justice, and advancing our workforce planning and development efforts. When we talk about organizational priorities, we're talking about the big picture focus areas that guide how we do our work across the entire organization. A lot of what we do is required. We implement laws, regulations, and direction from the State Water Board, legislature, governor, and federal agencies, but how we do that work and what we emphasize across all of our programs is where our organizational priorities come in. These priorities are cross-cutting themes that shape decision-making, resource allocation, and the day-to-day work across all of our programs. Next, I'm going to talk more about what we do, but after my bit, Maggie is going to come back and go into more detail on these organizational priorities. We have many water quality programs, and the strategic plan organizes them under four categories: plan and assess, regulate, clean up, and enforce, which we'll go over in the next four slides. So plan and assess is where we set the foundation. We develop plans, policies, water quality standards. We also monitor the conditions in our waterways. And as Christina just said, this is where we analyze 23 million lines of data. In simple terms, this is where we figure out what's going on in our waters and what our goals are and how to achieve them. The photos here show some of the water bodies that we protect and are actively monitoring. In the top left, we've got Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Program staff, or SWAMP for short, measuring water temperature in Coyote Creek. There's also an image of SWAMP staff below that, sampling Lake Merritt during the 2022 harmful algal bloom event. In the top right, we've got the Los Gatos Creek Percolation Pond, which is a groundwater recharge progress, which is part of our sustainable groundwater management program. And on the bottom right, we have a photo of Galenas Creek, which is, in this instance, inundated during a king tide, one of the many wetlands that will be monitored by our wetland regional monitoring program. Next up is regulate. This is where we prevent pollution. We issue permits for discharges of wastewater, stormwater, and other process waters to control pollutants before they reach our waters. We permit landfills to ensure wastes are properly contained and do not degrade surface or groundwater quality. We also issue authorizations for discharges of dredge and fill material to creek, wetlands, and other waters to make sure their impacts are avoided and minimized and otherwise appropriately mitigated. Running you through the photos, we've got in the top left an image of a storm drain standing in for our stormwater programs, such as the municipal, industrial, and construction stormwater programs. In the center left is the Potrero Hills landfill. Below that, the close-up of the cow represents our agricultural lands programs. It actually includes includes five programs, one of which is the grazing program. In the center, we have a wastewater treatment facility. Below that, a picture of some purple pipes representing our recycled water program. And on the right, the big photo is of the Montezuma Wetland Restoration Project in Suisun March, representing our creek, wetland, and bay habitat restoration program. Moving on, we have cleanup. And this is the program where we fix existing problems. We oversee the cleanup of contaminated sites like old industrial areas, sites with leaking underground storage tanks, and former active Department of Defense and Department of Energy facilities. Here's some of the photos. Top left, we have a refinery. As you may know, we have several cleanup sites associated with these. In the top middle is a photo of Lawrence Laboratory, a Department of Energy cleanup site. Top right is Hunter's Point, a Department of Defense site. And the bottom left shows an underground storage tank removal at a gas station. And the bottom middle and right photos show excavations of contaminated soil from various cleanup sites. Lastly, enforcement is how we make sure that the rules and regulations are followed. Depending on the severity of the violation, we take enforcement actions ranging from warnings to penalties to bring dischargers back into compliance. It's something that happens across all of our programs. So the photos on this slide are examples of violations for which we've pursued enforcement. On the left, we've got discharges of trash. In the center, discharge of sediment to a creek bed, and on the right, a failed silt fence associated with construction, causing discharges of sediment-laden stormwater into a drain. So if you're wondering what our work looks like in practice, this by-the-numbers table in the document will help illustrate the scale and scope of what we do. It's included in the strategic plan and is intended to provide a snapshot of our programs and activities. It shows things like the number of NPDES permits and recycled water programs we permit, and the range of facilities and sites we oversee, from municipal stormwater to industrial and construction sites to landfills and cleanup cases. Photos to the right show a couple things. On the top, our staff studying sediment deposition in Pescadero Creek. We can see our staff also inspecting green stormwater infrastructure to the right. And below that, we've got an image of our staff inspecting a winery. One last thing I want to say before I hand it over to Maggie is a new addition in this strategic plan, which is the spotlights. So these are short articles sprinkled throughout the What We Do section that each cover a particular issue. I've brought a few headlines and photos to illustrate a few of them, but you'll have to open the strategic plan to read the full article. We added these to make the plan more engaging by showing specific examples of our work in areas readers might be familiar with. For instance, the reducing nutrients in the bay on the right covers our response to the historic harmful algal blooms of 2022 and what we're doing to prevent future large-scale harmful algal blooms. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Maggie to talk about our organizational priorities in order to highlight some of our program targets and milestones included in this biennial update.
Thanks, Samir. So I'll jump right in with our first organizational priority, climate action. So climate change is one of the most significant and cross-cutting challenges that we face, and climate actions are fully integrated into our strategic plan, not only as a standalone effort, but embedded across all of our programs. Our role is to use our regulatory authority to advance climate adaptation planning, coordination, technical assistance, and permitting. To make this concrete, I'll highlight a few examples of how it shows up in our program priority actions, targets, and milestones. Okay, we are first implementing the Climate Change and Wetland Policy Basin Plan Amendment and continuing outreach to provide technical and regulatory support to shoreline communities. This helps advance nature-based shoreline adaptation and ensures local partners have the tools they need to plan for sea level rise. Another example, we're supporting municipal implementation of multi-benefit green stormwater infrastructure that addresses polluted runoff while also achieving co-benefits like climate and water supply resilience. This includes coordinating with permittees on long-term planning, reviewing their climate adaptation reports, and inspecting constructed projects to inform continuous improvement. And we're continuing to ensure sea level rise and groundwater rise impacts are addressed at cleanup sites. We're requiring vulnerability assessments throughout the life cycle of a site and at closure to ensure remedies remain protective over time. And we continue tracking where these assessments are being completed. Next, racial equity and environmental justice. We continue to implement our racial equity and environmental justice action plan developed in 2023. This action plan includes ongoing actions and planned next steps, which we continue to implement. The plan's focus is communities experiencing environmental racism or environmental injustice. We aim to build and sustain relationships with environmental justice communities and prioritize water quality issues that are affecting those communities. We're also focused on our own staff, continuing to focus on recruiting efforts to our diverse Bay Area public colleges and universities, and providing training to ensure all staff have an understanding of environmental injustice and approaches to address it. At its core, this means recognizing that some communities have been disproportionately impacted by pollution and environmental harms, and making sure our actions help address those inequities. Again, I'll highlight a few examples from our priority actions, targets, and milestones across the programs. One, in our basin planning program, we're working to designate tribal tradition and culture and tribal subsistence fishing beneficial uses in the basin plan, as you just heard about earlier today. This includes consulting directly with tribes and conducting CEQA scoping to support designation of these uses in the Bay Area water bodies. And this is an important step in recognizing and protecting tribal cultural practices and uses in water. And you just approved the first step in this of the proposed amendment to the basin plan to add the definitions. Two, we're improving how we prioritize inspections and enforcement in the industrial and construction stormwater program to maximize our effectiveness in protecting water quality from the over 3,000 enrollees under these permits in our region. We continue to refine our prioritization framework, which incorporates environmental justice considerations, along with threats to water quality and other site-specific factors, so that we're focusing our efforts where they're most needed. And we continue to apply an environmental justice lens to our cleanup programs. This includes prioritizing both active and backlogged contaminated sites in environmental justice communities and taking regulatory actions to reduce pollution risks and protect public health. And next, our workforce planning and development, our third organizational priority. We know that ultimately our ability to advance our mission depends on the strength and engagement of our staff. To support that, we focus on a few key actions. We work to create a welcoming and engaging environment where people feel supported from day one and have opportunities to grow. It starts with recruiting and onboarding, but really extends into how we support staff over time. We support staff to develop individual work plans, including taking on special projects and developing career development plans to reflect where they want to go and how to get there. We emphasize coaching and mentoring and support staff in building professional networks by joining professional organizations. We keep a list of professional organizations that existing staff are members of as a reference for newer staff, and attending networking events. And our recruitment team also keeps an updated list of local and virtual networking and learning events available for staff. On the onboarding side, we've put a lot of focus in recent years on strengthening our approach. Two examples that I've been a big part of, we launched an onboarding buddy program to help new staff build connections and confidence early on. We also have an onboarding program team that coordinates about quarterly onboarding events, usually over the lunch hour, which include team building activities as well as technical presentations and like program 101 overviews. Beyond the formal structure, we create informal opportunities to connect, like our annual picnic and ice cream social, field trips, which really help build a sense of team. Another key focus is continuous improvement. We actively engage staff in shaping how we improve our programs and processes. Our culture encourages initiative and innovation, thinking creatively, being adaptable, and bringing forward new ideas. We expect and support staff at all levels to engage in technical analysis and decision-making and to bring forward their ideas directly on how to approach problems or take on new projects or initiatives. And finally, we focus on being a learning organization. We encourage and support staff to participate in trainings, present at conferences, and engage in professional forums to share knowledge and bring new ideas back to the agency. As I already mentioned, we encourage everyone to have an individual development plan that outlines training and development goals and actions to achieve those goals. And that ongoing learning helps us stay effective and continue improving over time. Together, these actions help us build and retain a strong, capable, and inclusive workforce that's essential to delivering on our priorities and advancing our mission. So that concludes our overview of the strategic plan and the few highlights of what's inside this update. We invite you to review the plan to see the full scope of our work. We plan to finalize this and post it to our website and then begin its implementation in the next fiscal year. We track progress throughout the year, and we bring many major milestones to the board throughout the year. And as was done last September, we'll be back towards the end of this calendar year to report to the board on the outcomes for the current fiscal year. We also continue to use this for community outreach and for our recruitment efforts. And with that, I will turn it back to Eileen.
Great, thanks Maggie. So in closing, the strategic plan is a roadmap that guides us in achieving our mission. Before you is a photo of the talented and diverse team of environmental scientists, geologists, engineers, attorneys, and administrative professionals that are passionate about working together every day to protect the Bay Area's water resources. And I want to thank them for all their work. The diversity of the Water Board team and their many talents adds to the richness of the organization and the results that we can deliver to the public. Finally, I want to thank the board for all your support. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Eileen. Do we have any comments or questions from the board? Board Member Gunther?
You're accepting comments on this draft for a period of time?
Happy. We've got it published. We're putting it on our website.
Oh, sorry.
But if you have comments, we're happy to take them. I'm going to be sending out an email later today, like I do every 2 years to staff when we publish this, sharing it with them and then asking them for ideas. And one of the additions, the spotlights, was an idea that we got from one of our staff. So we're continuing looking for ways to improve the document, but this is kind of the 2026.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to give you edits if this is going onto the website. I want to, going back to your report where we were earlier in the meeting where we were celebrating the long-term work of several staff members, that there's a connection between the workforce development and achieving our mission. It seems to me that because so much of what we do takes a generation or more to achieve, and if we had higher turnover than we do, would it follow, in your opinion, that it would be harder to achieve our goals?
It would slow it down in what we could achieve.
Right.
Because you have to get people up to speed, whereas, you know, you look at people who've been in a program for a long time, like John Wolfenton, who's retiring. He has such institutional knowledge, and he could be thinking then strategically about how could we do processes better, and he developed, like, these template letters, whereas it takes a while when somebody new comes in to really learn before they're, you know, adding the extra value and thinking strategically.
That's what I was thinking. And so it seems to me that our ability to achieve our goals is really a function in part of the quality of our workforce development activities. And do we have numeric measures of the success of our, my memory is we do have, we have put out for ourselves goals for numeric goals that we can then compare our performance to.
Yes. So in the back of the strategic plan, we have tables that go into detail about what we hope to accomplish in fiscal year 26-27 and then fiscal year 27-28. And like we've done the last several Septembers, in September, the plan is to come back to the board and to present to the board what we've accomplished.
Exactly. That's great to hold ourselves accountable to what we produce. And my last question is, do you use this document in all of our various outreach to stakeholders? And have you got any response from people about whether this helps them understand us better?
Yes, definitely. And we've been using it in recent recruitments. We have a number of recruitments that have been going on with a number of vacancies. And I'm pleased to say that I think it makes it more transparent to the public what we do and for people to understand what we do. And a couple of people I've talked to said that they have found it very helpful to understand the whole scope of work. They might know one of our programs. They might know the cleanup program, or they might know MPDS or the watershed program. But even when we first did this, the very first version we did when I brought to the board in spring of 2023, one of our employees who'd been with the water board for almost 10 years sent me an email that night after I sent it out to everybody saying, Eileen, I didn't know about all the work we did, because they had worked in the one program. They said this is... So it's really been a very useful tool. Maggie's been one of the key leaders of our recruiting team. And as we go out to different universities, we talk to people that, you know, we're trying to get through our networks of people to apply for the water board. It really clearly, succinctly shows that we are very organized, we're planning, we're a team. You know, this has been developed as a team, and that we're accountable to ourselves and to the public.
So it's valuable not only for stakeholders, but it's valuable for prospective employees as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Then back to stakeholders, just another example where I've used it is when I've gone to the community meetings over in San Francisco for the Hunters Point Naval Shipyard. And I remember the first meeting I went to a month after I got hired, they're like, so what do you guys do? And what does the state board do? And what does EPA do? And what does Cal-EPA do? What does SFPUC do? What does the city do? And they're like, there's all these people. We don't know who does what. Mm-hmm. And so it was great. Once we got this developed, we went ahead and shared it with them. We could answer it. But it was really nice for them to have a document that they can refer to. This is the scope of what our role is. I get a lot of calls every week that come into our line saying, you know, my water smells funny or something, it's cloudy, and I have to call the person back and say, you know, we're not the person that provides the drinking water, and depending where they are, I refer them to their local water utility. So we get a lot of questions because people still aren't necessarily clear about what all these agencies do. So it's been a useful tool when we meet with the community-based organizations and as a recruiting tour.
Do we have and I say this with all great respect, do we have a two-page version?
We're going to do it. We did last time, Demir.
Okay.
Board Member Batty asked for it, and boy, Demir turned it around very quickly. And so we have one from the last version. We wanted to present this today before updating that. But we do, because when I go out to the community, I'll bring hard copies of this, and I'll bring the two-pager, and then tell them it's also on our website. But a lot of them, some of them want the full thing. Some want the two-pager.
Right.
So, okay. Yes.
Thank you. And Board Member Batty, I believe.
I just first wanted to say thank you to everyone. You know, this is really, looking down at Bill, thinking Bill and I have been on this board the longest, I think, now. And it's come a long way. And so, Eileen, thank you for your leadership and for the team putting this together. I just had one question. I love the goals. I'm super proud of this, the priorities, I should say. I'm very, very proud to be part of this. A couple of our priorities are pretty woke compared to the national sentiment right now. So I'm just curious if you're getting any pushback from any quarter around some of our priorities, particularly around both climate and equity are, getting a lot of scrutiny right now. So any pushback happening?
No, I'd say we're very lucky to be in the Bay Area. That's the beauty. I mean, people really, we have people who commute from Sacramento to come to the office 2 days a week. They could work out of Sacramento if they want to work here. The only thing I would say is, as we apply for grants at EPA, we don't use the word climate change. We can use the word sea level rise, but we don't use the word climate change. That's been out of the vocabulary as far as if we're pursuing federal funding. But we're lucky here in the Bay Area, and we're lucky in the state even. You know, we got the support of our governor and even the Attorney General's office when certain executive orders come out of D.C. that are inconsistent with what our work do that, you know, they've been following up.
Yeah, I mean, I think several of us have made reference to it today, but we are living in extraordinary times, and we are very fortunate to be here in California and to be in the Bay Area, but, you know, we are living in really times where the language and how we talk about things, we have to be pretty cognizant of the wider environment we're living in. So I'm sure you're navigating that. I'm super proud to be part of this, but it's just an interesting dynamic we find ourselves in. So thank you again for all the good work.
Thank you.
Thank you, and Vice Chair Hacker.
Thank you. Thanks to both of you and to each of the colleagues who supported this with Eileen. A suggestion when you come back in September, it would be lovely to have a page on which our new state fiscal year resource allocation is shown across the various programs. I know it could be in flux, but it would be helpful to be able to communicate how many people do we have in each of these major areas.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting for you to see. I'm so impressed with our team, with what we do. You know, you heard Christina in her presentation. It's amazing what we get done here with the amount of people we have. But we will include that. Thank you so much for mentioning that.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. And my only real comment is that the spotlight was a great idea. It's the first thing I noticed when I was reviewing the agenda. I was like, oh, it jumps out very quickly. It gives you a reason to continue reviewing the rest of the information. So thank you guys very much for the hard work, great work. It turned out very well. Looking forward to more iterations. Julie, do we have any members of the public that would like to comment on this item?
We have no registrations for this item.
Thank you. And for the public here, does anyone want to like to comment? I see none. Thank you all. So we are at the meeting adjournment part here. So this concludes the public session of the April 8th, 2026 San Francisco Bay Water Board meeting. No correspondence was received, and there is no closed session scheduled today. Thank you all for joining us. We appreciate your engagement. Our next meeting is scheduled offsite for May 13th, 2026, starting at 9 a.m. at Mission Bay in San Francisco. This will be an in-person only meeting. And with that,
Excuse me. It's going to start at 9:30. I apologize.
9:30. Make that correction. No problem, everyone.